Last weekend, a friend of mine and I went down to Los Angeles. So we landed on a Thursday and just were picked up at the airport and driven up to a northern suburb where we'd be giving the first program. And by the time we got there, I was struck today by the affirmation, sirens of distraction. It's what it felt like. I don't know how recently any of you have been in Los Angeles, but Los Angeles is the billboard capital of the world. Everywhere you go, I mean, for miles and miles, there's billboards. And, you know, it's also the capital of movies and theater. And so the billboards are not exactly filled with calm, uplifting energy, but you're assaulted by them. It's just hard to describe if you haven't been there, but on every corner there's at least four. And it has all of the energy of the world right now, what's in the movies. It's just filled with intensity and darkness and anger and just the most blatant sexuality, and the colors are intense, and people in various stages of dress and undress, and the dress is probably worse than the undress. And I was riding around really wanting to be polite, because these people who were driving me, they live there. And I thought, you know, I didn't want to say to them, yikes, how do you do this? So I just kept saying to myself, go inside, go inside. I was very aware of it that day, very aware of it that night. We had a really beautiful program up north that evening. A lot of people, just deep love for God and desire to know God and hear these teachings. And then we got home, and Friday morning woke up, and the same thing starts with this assault. But by the time Friday afternoon came, I realized that every time I stopped just to be in meditation or to listen to somebody speaking in a group, again, there was a lot of movement, there was an ability to come into my heart that was unique. There are no words for what I'm about to try and say, so just bear with me. But as the day went on over Friday, I started feeling that wherever I was having an experience, a wordless experience of God is love. It was so profound and so moving. And by Friday night, I was not noticing any of the billboards. Nothing was distracting me from this experience that I was having. And I didn't say anything about it to anyone, but I think it was just coming, it was being expressed in the programs, but not in words. And then Sunday morning, I said to Narayan and Dharmadevi, who were hosting us, I said to them, you know, every time I stop at all, wherever I am, there's so much love in my heart that I feel like I'm going to cry. And they had been joking about people who get up to speak and cry a lot. So I was saying, it just was weird, they were just bringing it up there. So I said to them, I'm so worried that I'm going to stand up to give Sunday service and cry, and I'll be one of those people. But Dharmadevi said to me, she said, I have felt that here for years. She said, it was very hard for me when I first arrived here. She said, I felt like I had to barricade myself inside for a while to get away from all these sirens of distraction, because it's what it feels like. And she said, but now, for many years, my meditations here are the deepest that I have anywhere, wherever I go. Now, I was telling her about my heart experience, thinking it was, you know, this wonderful feeling of moving around from one Ananda community to another. It's a very deep and joyful experience wherever you go in the Ananda world, because the vibration is the same, because it's Yogananda and Swami Kriyananda and all of the disciples, and it's in the music and the readings, you very quickly attune yourself to that vibration. It's exactly what we live with. But she said to me, Yogananda was here, and he kept coming back here. And she said, his vibration is everywhere. Now, I've been going down there on pilgrimage for years, and when I would go to the pilgrimage sites, I would say that, I would know that. I would say to everybody, remember, masters meditated on every square inch of this property. Wherever we are, we're with him. But I don't know, I forgot, like he had to get from one place to another or something. But he's everywhere there. And I knew she was right as soon as she said it. And I felt such enormous gratitude. I felt several things. First of all, gratitude towards him that he keeps coming back for us, that he himself reincarnates because we need him. And he comes and he's there. And it's not like he was there. He is still there. And then I realized that anytime we go to Los Angeles, we are on a pilgrimage. It doesn't matter. We didn't go to any of Master's homes or Lake Shrine or Forest Lawn. We were simply in Los Angeles, where he was everywhere. And I thought, we're on pilgrimage. And then the thought came to me, that's what life is, our life as truth seekers. Our whole life is a pilgrimage. Of course our life is a pilgrimage. I mean, spiritually, we say it all the time. We talk about this astral spine. We talk about the journey from the base of the spine to the point between the eyebrows. That's a pilgrimage that we take. And we keep coming back, life after life after life, to be able to continue on that journey. We just make whatever progress we can make one of the in each life. And then our soul carries all of those memories with it, whatever progress we make and whatever progress we don't make. Nothing's forgotten. We're born again, we pick up, and we just continue on the journey. There was a satsang one afternoon when we were down there, and the whole weekend was about Kriya Yoga, this particular type of meditation that we teach here. But somehow, in that satsang, everybody wanted to talk about death and dying. It's a very popular topic, actually. I mean, for everyone, all the time. If we give a class on it, it's very well attended. But people were asking really very good questions, like, how do you know, and what does it feel like, and what's it like to leave the body? I mean, a lot of questions. But in an effort to try and put into an image or words this notion of reincarnation, I said to them, just imagine yourself starting out in New York City, wanting to make your way to California. So you put your thumb out, and the perfect car stops for you, and you get in. And you have a great ride with this person really interesting person. You love everything about the ride, easygoing, no traffic. But you get to Ohio, and he says, I'm sorry, this is as far as I'm going. You don't want to leave him. You want to stay on that ride because it was perfect. But that's as far as that person's going. You get out of the car, you start the journey again. You haven't lost any distance. You've made your way to Ohio, better than New York, but you still have to get to California. You're getting out of one car and into another, but nothing about you is changing. You're just simply on a journey. You're on your way, and you will get there. You'll arrive there. There will be a lot of issues along the way, a lot of questions, how long the ride's going to go, how many detours will you have to take, but you'll get yourself to California. Just as a way of explaining and talking about this incredibly complex topic of reincarnation. It's so much bigger than what our minds can hold, because just like Krishna said to Arjuna, I remember all of our lives, but you don't remember any of them. I know exactly what this looks like. I know where you're going. But you don't know. It's huge. I had mentioned some time ago, probably years ago in here, a little something on YouTube that somebody had sent me to. It's called 2009 Seconds that will, it's not blow your mind, but it's like that. Have you question everything in life? And it just starts out, some of you, I even showed this in a class, with a picture of Earth. I don't want to take a long time explaining this, but the first picture comes up. Earth takes up the whole screen, and it says big, right? And you think, yeah, that's big. But then it goes on and on and on, and it backs Earth up first into our solar system. It shows Earth in comparison to other planets. Then it shows it in comparison to the sun. And the sun is huge, and we are tiny. And then it goes out into the galaxy. It shows the Earth in the Milky Way. You can't find it. It's a little dot on the screen. You have to look really hard. They have to make it flash. And then they start talking about how many galaxies there are. It just goes on and on. And in that moment, you know, there's a saying at the end of that little 209 seconds where it says, there are more stars in this galaxy than there are grains of sand on Earth. But there are more atoms in one grain of sand than there are stars in all galaxies. You know, who thinks like that? We can't keep our minds like that. What does that mean? Those are the kind of concepts we're talking about when we're talking about reincarnation and things that we simply can't wrap our minds around, except to say what a beautiful opportunity we're being given, life after life after life, to make spiritual progress, to try and get back to where we began, just like we talk about in our festival every week. It's the most beautiful story of reincarnation. If we listen every line of it, the soul's long journey away from its home in God. And there's a line in there that says, this bird's brief day, because we're telling it like it's a day, is eons of our time. Eons, because Yogananda tells us we have to go through 8 million incarnations before we even get to the human condition. And once we bring ourselves back to a human life, guess what we're given? This great gift of free will, so that we can live in as much delusion as we want for as long as we want. And delusion is huge. if there are an infinite number of delusions throughout a life. There's a wonderful story about Milarepa, who was a Buddhist who lived in the year in about the 10th century, 10th or 11th century. But this story about him, if you just look him up, you just Google him, it says he was a murderer and then he attained enlightenment. But it was trickier than that because he was born into this family of great wealth, of great means. They had everything. And then his father died. And as was the custom of the day, all of the wealth then went to an uncle. And the uncle and his family basically stole all of the money, took everything away from Milarepa and his family, and they were living in a little hut. They didn't have enough food. They had come from a life of abundance on the material plane to nothing. So that could make you angry. I mean, it would probably make any of us angry. Milarepa's mother got very angry, and she convinced him to practice witchcraft and to get back at the uncle. She wanted him to hurt the uncle as she had been hurt. And he did that. And he hurt people, and he stole from them, and he killed them. And one day he woke up and realized that he was living in delusion. He felt all of the pain that he had caused, all of the harm that he had done. This is a dramatic story, but not so different than our lives, where we feel justified at times in misbehaving, which is what his mother wanted him to do. And so he immediately changed his ways, and he started behaving differently. He started really living for God. He started righting the wrongs, and he became enlightened in that very lifetime. When I heard that story, which I heard many years ago, I thought, you know, there's two important things in that story. One is that there's an infinite number of ways that we can go wrong. There's so much delusion in this world. It would just be so easy, and it is so easy, to get into this life and think, power, that's a good thing. I'll have a little power. But instead of claiming the power of God, we claim personal power. We start dictating things in the world that we shouldn't. Joy, there's a great idea. But instead of finding true joy, we latch on to moments of happiness that just disappear. We talk about love, but we don't go after divine love. We go after personal love. We're inevitably disappointed. And it just goes on and on. This is the way of the human condition. This is why we need so many millions of lifetimes. But this is also where free will takes us. It's like we create a dream, and within the dream are our own failures, our own lacks, our own misunderstandings. But we see Milarepa became enlightened in that life. We are not here trying to perfect the dream that we have. We're dreaming all of that disillusionment. That is not our goal in life. Our goal is self-realization. Our goal is to transcend the dream. And that's why we are given all of these lives, to keep moving down this path. Life is really, in essence, a school for us. And it's a great school because we can count on being given exactly the lessons we need in exactly the form we need them. And all of the times when we're tempted to say, couldn't I have learned that lesson some other way? We ask God, no, the answer is no, we can't. Every experience in our life, exactly the right people are there, the wrong people are not there. The right door opens, the right door closes. This is exactly how we need to live. And it's a school. Now, we want the school to be a great school, but not for a minute should we think that if the school is perfect, it makes us perfect. The school is there as an opportunity for us to perfect ourselves. So we want to go to a great school. We want to make the most out of it. But what we want is to get back to our heart's longing to know God. We can take as little time or as much time as we want to graduate. But remember, like in every school, we run the chance of flunking out. It happens. We could be straight A students, we can make progress, we can move closer to the degree, to graduation, or we can fail. This is where the free will comes in. We have this constant choice that we get to make. Which direction will I head? How quickly will I go? Because these sirens of distraction are there, and they're not always as unpleasant as sirens. Sometimes they're very pleasant, and they just take us on these detours, as it says in the festival, even when we repeatedly lose everything we have, we're on our way out. Remember, that second stage is called the revolt. And it's not until we go through wind and rain and darkness and fear until finally we start asking the question, wait a minute, this isn't working. How do I get back here? And then we start, as the festival says, and we surrender. We join our power with divine power. The soul cannot make its way home to God until it's perfected. And in order to be perfected, it needs to develop and grow all of these qualities that we're being given opportunities to develop and grow along the way. Non-attachment, fearlessness, contentment. I was thinking about a moment that I've shared with you before with Swami Kriyananda, who was somebody who lived with equanimity. He just lived with it. I don't know where I was recently when somebody was saying, maybe it was even here, all of the years that they knew Swamiji, they never once saw him frightened or angry or, how is that? And some of you will remember I told you the story. He sat down across from a dinner table with me one night, and absolutely apropos of nothing but maybe this moment, he said to me, Shanti, I've never been afraid of anything, just like that. And I thought to myself, wow. I mean, instantly, lists of thousands of things I've been afraid of came into my head. He said, let me think about that for a minute. Then he said, that's true. I've never been afraid of anything. And I realized when I was reading through some stuff last night, yeah, that's what happens as the soul gets perfected. That's why we have to keep coming back. That's why we need with great fervor, great energy, to ignite that spark of the divine that's within each of us. That's what we need to do. And it can only come from within us to keep moving to that place of equanimity that Swamiji lived in. One of the women in LA asked me this question that I hear so often in so many different forms, but she asked it just outright. She said, I just can't meditate. I cannot sit. I can't meditate. Isn't there some other way? She literally said to me, isn't there an easier way? You know, and you've heard me say it. Of course, the answer is no. But then I was thinking last night, you know, there are so many things that we can do on the way there. So many simple things. When we find ourselves having a negative thought, catch it as soon as we can. Turn it into a positive thought. Gee, I wanted to see what was wrong. Let me see what's right. Let me practice. I said this to a woman in LA. She's really trying hard. And I found a perfect way to say to her, you know, you don't smile enough. I don't see you smile. Smile more. Just smiling. Just when you find yourself lost or starting to feel out of tune, bring your attention, right? Just raise your eyes up. There are all of these things that we can do that we're being given this opportunity, this great, incredible life. Not only are the masters reincarnating for us, we're reincarnating over and over because we have no choice. We will make it back to our home in God. We will make it to that place of equanimity, of non-attachment, of desirelessness, which is one of the chants that was sung today. Hard to imagine right now, but if we just keep moving ourselves in the right direction with all of the grace that I felt in LA, with Master available for every one of us to just walk into our hearts so that we know we're living in divine love, moment by moment, even when we can't stay there. I remember what that felt like. That's my goal. My goal is to live there all the time. What's my next step to get me back to my home?
Oh.